Hello and welcome back to another episode of Drone World, the podcast by Copters. I'm your host, Tom, and today I'm joined by...
Tom Garnett.
What do you do, Tom?
I am the marketing executive for the surveying and construction sector at Copters.
And who else am I joined by?
Sam Dennis,
the head of public sector for Copters. And today we're going to be talking about some of the best stories coming from the drone industry, specifically in public sector, from January 2022. So let's kick it off and let's go for West Mids arresting four males by the use of drone. So basically what happened was West Mids police were using their drone technology to detain four males who have been seen in possession of a machete in Wolverhampton. So Sam, let's kind of dive into this. Why would they have been using drones in that circumstance, really?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty classic kind of drone use case, and it's one that's been around since the start of police using drones, I'd say. It's your eye in the sky. It's your get something in the air. I think they used the thermal camera as well as the visual camera on that, because I think it was at night time, so they were tracking someone on a Saturday night. Use the thermal camera, make sure the ground teams know where the guys are, and also that you can tell that there's four of them, potentially see that they're carrying stuff. I think you say they're carrying a machete?
Yeah, possession of machete.
Yeah, so if you can tell that they've got weaponry, you know that it's not a case of let's just approach them and have a chat. Maybe you need specialist officers to be there. So it's tracking them down, make sure you know where they're moving to, and making sure your ground teams are coordinated, basically.
Yeah, because it was Wolves Police, West Mids drone team, and then West Mids Firearms Department. So obviously...
Yeah, so they'll have seen that there's someone with a weapon called the Firearms Team, and might have saved them a bit of time rather than having to do it by ground, or even if they might have had to call in a helicopter, that would have taken a chunk of time up and also probably cost them quite a lot of money as well to do that.
Yeah, I mean, entirely weather dependent as well, because we've got drones you can put up in the sky immediately. If you have to wait on MPAS, again, takes a bit of time, but also reliant on the weather as well there. You know, if they have a weather turn, then your helicopters, high winds, might not be able to arrive as well. Is that not right?
Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong, most drones, especially probably what they used here, you can't fly in, you know, any conditions. It's not like they could throw them up in a hurricane, but certainly some conditions that you can't use the helicopter and you can use the drone and vice versa. But it's more just the speed and the cost are the main benefits. So I imagine with it being the West Mids Police drone team, they're quite a big drone team. They've been going for a while. We've supplied them with kit and training for probably 5 or 6 years now. They've got a lot of pilots trained up. They've got a lot of equipment. They're pretty far advanced. So I imagine they just had a drone and a pilot available to react very quickly. So they've got someone there really quickly, got the drone in the air, located the, I think it was four people, and sent ground teams in from there. Yeah, if it was hammering it down with rain, they might not have been able to use that. They might have had to call in a helicopter or whatever else it may be. But if they can use the drone 70, 80% of the time, then it's a huge benefit. And I know especially these guys, they do have drone kit that can be used in really poor weather as well. It just might be that it takes them a bit of a longer time to get that set up and to use it.
I think that highlight of speed is really important. I think for a situation like this, you really want to be getting intel as soon as possible.
Oh yeah, I mean, you don't want a guy running around with a machete for a second longer than he has to be, really. That's the long and short of it. And yeah, if you can, we've done some stuff with this kind of drone where it tests of how quick you can get it in the air from the box, and it tends to be that a minute, 90 seconds, maybe a maximum of 2 minutes, and you can be in the air with a drone like this. So you can react pretty much instantly to anything like this that happens.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And, you know, as we said, that situational awareness, traditionally you might be acting on out-of-date intel. You've always got that eye in the sky. You can see if people are trying to dip out the back of the house, over the fences, etc. You've got them surrounded. So everyone knows, you know, when you're going to be confronting someone. No one's left in the dark, which is obviously the main aim. We want everyone coming back safely.
Yeah, and there are some really, really cool, innovative, kind of forward-thinking applications with drones to public safety. People are experimenting with at the minute. This isn't one of them. This is just putting a drone in the sky and using it for good. And it's easy to overlook that, especially when we get on later onto the sort of survey grade applications and mapping and LiDAR and all that kind of stuff. But this side of things is where it started, and I don't think it'll ever be made redundant by anything else. It'll always be a case of if you can get something in the sky to be able to see where people are and gather more information, it's always going to be a huge benefit.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, similar sort of situation. We'll go on to Avon and Somerset police arresting a man after a 17-hour standoff. Now, in this situation, they've been using a Matrice 300. Now, we bang on constantly about how good a drone this is.
Yeah, good bit of kit. Very good bit of kit.
Obviously, 17-hour standoff, you'd imagine they've got, you know, full battery packed battery stations, constantly keeping the drone in the sky.
I'd say what they've probably done there is they'll either have, I don't think they've got a tether. I didn't see one mentioned anywhere in the story. So, I mean, they might have done it, might have just not been picked up by the news. But if not, what they've probably done is got loads of batteries charged up and they've just brought the drone down and cycled them and then have a generator or some way to charge in the back of a vehicle like a van. And that way you can land for 15, 20 seconds and be back in the air. So I imagine that's probably what they did. Or they might have had two drones and they might have put one up while the other was coming down and just cycled it that way. But yeah, 17 hours, that's a long time to be, never mind a drone, that's a long time to be flying a drone for. So hopefully they had a few pilots that got to rotate during that.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll put some more context around this. So in Weston, down in Somerset, we've got more than 20 houses evacuated after someone was basically threatening life around there. And they had drone, firearm, medical and fire personnel on there as well, attempting to de-escalate the situation with trained negotiators. So obviously having the drone up there. And one of the best things about the M300, and the right sound, is that we've got the hot swapping capability. So I know you said about 15 seconds, but just explain how that works.
Yeah. So obviously most drones have one battery. So when that battery comes out, it's off, as is always going to be the case. With the Matrice 300, it takes two batteries. So what you can do when you land it is take one of those batteries out and put a new one in. So it'll keep running off the second battery and then put in the second battery. So it's kind of hard to explain. It's really hard to explain when you can't picture it.
Yeah.
Pop one out. So you can do a better job than me. You pop one out, pop another one in.
We've got a camera on here, so we might be able to.
Like this. So you pop one in, pop another one out. And basically, the drone never turns off while you're switching the batteries. So it lands and takes back off without you having to reset anything. It doesn't have to do any calibration. The camera doesn't have to spin around in the gimbal like it does when it turns on. It doesn't have to re-find its GPS satellites. Any of that stuff, it can be back in the air as quickly as you can change those batteries over. And it can be, with a bit of practice, it can be 10, 15 seconds.
And that's the main point, isn't it? We don't want to be calibrating the drone every single time. You can imagine how long that can last, and time is everything in these sort of situations, especially.
I mean, yeah, if you've got something like that, if you're using these drones to watch whether he, I'm not sure exactly what they were doing with it. I imagine just watching the building to make sure he didn't leave or make sure no one went in. If the drone's down for 3 or 4 minutes, that's enough time for him to either escape or it's enough time for someone to throw something in. But I mean, what we have seen with stuff like this is if you're watching someone, say, fleeing a vehicle and they're moving, often the drone will catch them dropping something, throwing something into a bush. So then what police have always traditionally done is if they know someone's ran from a vehicle and they might have had drugs or weapons or anything, they have to check the route they've gone on by hand. If you can catch them throwing something into a bush and you go back and it's a knife or a gun and you've got video of them doing it, there's no way they can just say, well, that's not mine. Even though it's there and I ran past that spot and you saw me with it earlier, you can't prove that was mine. Whereas if you've got footage of them with it and then throwing it, you can. So yeah, if they've got the drone down for a few minutes and they miss him throwing something out the window, for example, or anything like that, yeah, I don't think they'd be very happy. So it's a simple feature that DJI put into the M300, but huge, huge benefits in public safety.
Yeah, and I imagine, you've seen similar sort of situations in survey as well with downtime for drones.
Yeah, of course. I mean, a big part of surveying is obviously operational efficiency. So you're wanting to spend as little time on site as possible, especially if you're outsourcing your operations to a drone company. You want to be one and done. You want to make sure that your data is accurate, but you also want to do it as quickly as possible so the deliverables can be delivered to your client.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But we'll just jump on because obviously we're going to come on to, again, as we've alluded to before, a little bit more of a surveying / public safety aspect a little bit later on with our drones. And I just kind of want to touch on, this is one that's we've heard about a couple of times, especially when doing case studies, etc. It's really good to see this in the news. So West Midlands Police arresting two men in relation to a £2.5 million cannabis farm. So around 3,000 to 4,000 plants were discovered, equating to about £2.5 million. Two people fled the property and quickly detained by officers. Now, obviously, there's the drone footage to show when these two people were captured, but we're seeing now how these drones are being used to root out cannabis farms in the first instance, aren't we, Sam?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of a really simple way to look at the crossover between public safety and other industries, like inspection and like survey is... drones have been used to look at heat loss ever since you could strap a thermal camera onto a drone. And effectively, that's what they're doing, is they're looking for heat loss. So if you've got a row of terraced houses and one of them is giving off significantly more heat than the rest, it used to be that what police would do is send a helicopter out when it snowed and look for roofs where there was no snow on them.
Absolutely.
And all the neighbours did. And now they can do that any time of year using drones. And when you've got something like, for example, the Mavic Enterprise Advanced, where you've got a really high-res thermal camera on a drone that is the size of a shoebox. Yeah, if you've got a drone that big, you can put that up in areas and it's relatively inconspicuous. You're probably not going to get members of the public coming up and accosting you and shouting at you,
mm-hmm.
At least not as much as you would if it was a much bigger piece of kit. So yeah, really beneficial to have that capability for police. And it's not always active chasing down the baddies. A lot of it is stuff like that.
And that's the great thing as well. I mean, obviously, when doing searches, arrests, etc., you know, you have to obtain warrants beforehand as well. So using drone technology and being able to record this evidence, you can then put that forward and say, we have sufficient evidence to believe that there is X going on in this house. And you can put that forward to your seniors, realistically, can't you?
Kind of similar. There was one from, I think it was West Midlands Police again, where they'd...
Yeah, a lot of shout-outs from West Midlands Police today. A lot of appreciation.
Some of the stuff they put out on socials is really good. And the fact that they're happy to display their wins is brilliant. Mm. But I mean, police do it in, you know, they do shows like Police Interceptors and all that kind of stuff where they show us their wins.
Yeah.
So why not do it with the new type of drones? But yeah, so they did one where they scanned a building and found a knife in some guttering where someone had been arrested in the attic. So obviously they'd thrown it out the windows, they'd get fingerprints off the knife and match it to them and all that kind of stuff. So that's something where they probably never would have found that.
As simple as it sounds.
Because they wouldn't bring a helicopter in just to take a look for that, because it cost them thousands of pounds. But the officer there just happened to have a drone and thought, I'll do a quick recce, and found a big, like a Rambo knife, a big knife in a piece of guttering. So that could have just been left there for anyone to find if they hadn't found it.
That's it. You know, so much missing evidence that can potentially just be gone and, you know, not be used. It could be the difference between someone being prosecuted for a crime and or not being out on the streets still at large. So it's great to see that it's making a difference to so many lives out there. Last story before we get on to a little bit of new tech is the Lincolnshire Police and Fire are tackling the Hemswell fires using drone technology. So
I think that's still going, isn't
it? It's still going. Yeah, wow. So it's still going.
Huge.
I'm really hoping by the time that this podcast comes out that it's stopped. Well done to everyone that's been dealing with it. It's been going for about a week now. So Thursday, the 27th of January, it started. Around 30,000 hay bales caught alight, and due to strong winds from Storm Malik and some ashes sort of blowing into these hay bales, and something small as that.
And I think if anyone listening wants to get an idea of it, if you Google it and look at some of the pictures, it's like, it looks like hell.
It looks like, yeah, it's literally
it,
like,
it looks like a mountain's on fire.
Yeah,
it is absolutely horrendous. And I can't imagine how awful. Well, firstly, how awful it is for, I imagine, the farmer or whoever's land it is, but then also for the guys who've got to try and put it out and contain it.
Yeah.
That's got to be a really tough job.
Yeah, I mean, they've had help from Nottinghamshire come over to help sort of contain it. There's a fireworks factory actually just down the road that's being shielded from it. It always seems to be in these sort of situations that there's something flammable in
conveniently
a paper factory.
Yeah, conveniently placed fireworks factory.
But yeah, I mean, hopefully everything's gone. But basically, what they're using the drones for is to sort of measure the spread of the fire and then also to see, you know, whether it's cooling down, I guess, is the simplest way to put it, really.
Yeah, I mean, what they'll probably do as part of one aspect of it is just sort of for training and just for monitoring. So just gather footage so you can use it in future to see how these things develop. Another aspect might be making sure that people aren't going to get too near it, because as we all know, in this day and age, people love to just take photos of things they shouldn't be anywhere near or should take photos of. And there's a reason you don't want to get too close to, what was it, 30,000 bales of hay that are on fire. God. Maybe stay away. Probably not the best idea to try and get a photo of that for Instagram. But people do it. So you can use drones to make sure there's people not getting too close. And then, yeah, the other one is to look at the kind of the hotspots and where to target it and just use it as additional info to make sure you're directing your resources to the right area.
It's kind of giving me ideas of moorland fires. You know, when you see fires up on the moors in like the Yorkshire moors that burn for
I know the Greater Manchester Fire had I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago, they had a big struggle. I think they worked with South Yorkshire and basically the whole West Yorkshire region. But yeah, they had a big issue with moorland fires. The thing with those is you often can't see them. because a lot would often be burning basically underground.
It's terrifying.
Wow. Yeah, you can just see smoke coming out in certain areas. But from the sky, you can't see it burning. So using a drone there to pick up hotspots, you wouldn't see that it's still burning without using a drone. That was a big use case a couple of years ago.
Yeah, really good. Really good. I mean, I haven't heard of that, but that's amazing, realistically. It really gives perspective on how to tackle these sort of things. But yeah, I mean, we'll bring you in, Tom, because we've had you sitting around for nearly 20 minutes now. So let's talk LiDAR, let's talk mapping, and let's talk about how it can be used in public safety, because it's a relatively new sort of use case that we've had and we've seen coming in the last sort of couple of months or so. I mean, there's been some sort of pioneers, but a lot of people are kind of testing around with it, isn't it? So
just pretend we don't know anything about it. Just pretend.
Yeah. So LiDAR is something that's been...
What does it stand for?
LiDAR stands for light detection and ranging. It's something that's been available in or been used in surveying for years and years. You see base stations and you see the stands with three legs with a LiDAR mount on the top. And they're basically used to create a 3D image of your surroundings. And increasingly now they're being attached onto drones because they've been made lighter. And it now means that the companies can now get a much richer, a more detailed image of buildings, of topographic areas. Yeah, and it just means that instead of having to use, let's say, a LiDAR mount that's on the ground, you can now use that in the air, whilst previously you'd use a photogrammetry payload in the air and LiDAR on the ground.
Yeah, I think that there's some obvious, well, maybe obvious for us, hopefully obvious for police and fire as things develop, use cases for it. I think the idea initially especially with police and fire, was that the accuracy you get from sort of general photogrammetry was fine, and they didn't really need it to be absolutely accurate. They could just have it be sort of relatively accurate. But I think that's changing. And I think part of it is they can use maps and models as evidence now, and that's becoming more prevalent.
And training as well.
Yeah, I mean, training is a massive part of it as well. And accuracy for that is obviously really important. And what we're seeing is scans of huge areas of ground, and they're picking up areas that look like they might be disturbed. For example, for stuff like shallow graves or when evidence has been buried, all that kind of stuff, where normally you'd have a huge chain of officers hand in hand walking across a field and spend a lot of money on overtime for those officers. Yeah, there's definitely some use cases there. We're just starting to see the early adopters kind of come through from survey now.
Yeah, I think especially that idea of officers hand in hand searching fields. LiDAR, that's one of its amazing specialties, is in vegetation. So with photogrammetry, you're just going to get a typical image and there's going to be no penetration with that vegetation. But with LiDAR, you can see vegetation or grass that has been broken. So if you are searching in large areas, you can see exactly where somebody has travelled.
Yeah, and I think stuff as well, like if you've got vehicles going off-road, if you're tracking the length of skid marks where they've braked, and yeah, there's tons of stuff. And this is always the case. This was the case with general drones 6 or 7 years ago. Until we see one or two police forces, sorry, fire services, but it does tend to be police forces that kind of take the leap with new tech in that area first. So as soon as you see one or two of them do that, the rest will follow when they see the success of it. So, and I think we're getting to that point now. We're certainly seeing more interest in that kind of tech. They're seeing that, yes, it might be a lot more expensive than just buying a drone, but the benefits long-term are pretty big and pretty clear from industries like survey what it can do.
Exactly. I mean, you know, people are obviously realizing, we say it all the time again, but drones aren't just, you know, bang up in the air. It's now the vehicle for having different payloads, different sensors on it. So we'll talk about that briefly sort of before we come to an end. So looking at LiDAR payloads, what have we got that are in there for us?
So to begin with, we, as an entry level, we have the Zenmuse L1, which is DJI's first kind of foray into the LiDAR market. It has a Velox sensor and an integrated RGB camera. So it does mean that if you are collecting those LiDAR point clouds, you can colorize that data. So if you are trying to reconstruct a crime scene, if you are looking at something like a car crash, you can fully map out every detail and then colorize it to ensure that, let's say, pieces of the crime scene, you can spot different pieces compared to the tarmac, or things like that.
I'm really glad you explained that, because I didn't understand a word of what you said at the beginning.
Yeah, I've been sat here kind of late, just absently nodding along. And look, to be fair, this is the good thing. We have survey experts in-house, like Tom and like his colleague James, and we have people in copters that understand and know this kit. Not all of us do understand and know this kit, but the great thing is you don't have to be a surveyor to use it.
No.
I think is what we're finding. So if you're in the police and you heard that and went, I don't know what any of that means, but you might have picked out a couple of details of that little bit there might be useful, but I'm not sure how we'd do it. You're who we want to speak to, and you're who we want to get in touch with us, because we can try and translate that and make it make sense and show you how to get that output that you need.
Mm-hmm. And I think the nice thing that we're seeing is because DJI is potentially leading this charge into LiDAR being used in public safety, they're using a lot of the lessons that they've learned from their commercial level drones into the software that is used for your LiDAR payload. So it's not this kind of big, scary payload to be used anymore. It's as simple as plug and go, and then you look at the data afterwards and you're getting incredible accuracy, and it's going to be awesome for crime scene reconstruction and things like that.
I think that plug and play is super important. And my experience working with police, fire, military, to a lesser extent, search and rescue, private security, all those kind of guys, their day job comes first and the drone side of things always comes second, which is absolutely fine. But if you give them something that's overly complex, they're going to look at it once and go, I don't know how to use that. And it's going to sit in a store cupboard, never be used. And that's the last thing we want. So a huge part of what we do is not just providing the equipment and going, off you go, try and see if you can get that to work. It's all the support that comes with it. And manufacturers like DJI have made that a lot easier, because their kit's really easy to use now. And you don't have to be, as we said, you don't have to be an expert to use it.
Yeah, just dipping away from DJI quickly, because there is one new product that we have had coming onto the market sort of back end of last year, is the Emerson Hovermap. So do you want to talk us through that quickly?
Yes. So Hovermap by Emerson, an Australian company founded in the last few years, is a SLAM-based mapping payload. So SLAM means that you'll be getting the location as well as the mapping capabilities. So when you are creating those really in-depth 3D maps, it's also going to be localized, so you can later take that data and exactly place your images based on those point clouds. But I mean, the beauty with Hovermap is that it's versatile, so you can connect it or add it onto your drone capabilities, but you can also walk with it. You can attach it to a vehicle. So if you are looking for something that can really give you those LiDAR capabilities throughout your whole operations, Hovermap's wicked. Mm-hmm. It really does it.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing the starts of some interest in that kind of tech now. So we've had a couple of police forces we've shown it to, and there's definitely an interest there. We're going to have to get over the cost of it, because that's one barrier. It is more expensive when you're used to buying a drone for a couple of £1,000. But as soon as someone starts using it and sees what it can do, and the fact that you've got not just the mapping capability, but you've got absolute location as well for evidence gathering, that's going to be massive. If you can shorten a trial by a few days,
yeah,
that'll cover its cost. So like that, it'd be super quick.
I think especially for complex crime scenes, let's say if you're going into an apartment building and you need to map all the walls, everything, you need to know exactly what's happened in a room even. An officer can be carrying Hovermap on a backpack and just walk around the room, and within 15 minutes can have an entire room mapped out.
Yeah, and then they can leave, stick that on a drone and map the whole building.
Exactly.
And map the driveway, see what vehicle tracks they've got coming in and out, footprints coming in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah, huge scope for that kind of stuff. I think towards the middle to end of this year, it's going to be a big, big uptake in that kind of tech.
Right, I think we're running out of time. So, guys, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks
a lot.
If you're not following us, then follow us. It's Copters on all the socials. Don't forget to like and rate, and we'll see you next time.